Hello and welcome back to a Western Conference final preview edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast and a crossover with Jovan Buha Forum Club. That might be bold of me, Jovan. I'm not ready to predict this is going to be a West Finals preview, but shockingly competitive game between the Warriors and Lakers. Even more shockingly, the Warriors won because of their backups. They beat a cruise control Lakers team. How would you define the Lakers' effort on MLK Day?
I think cruise control is a good word, or you know, a couple words for their effort tonight. They denied that post game. You know, they chalked this up to just the Warriors outplaying them, out executing them down the stretch. But I felt like it was one of those games where they got the big lead, they went into cruise control, and then they tried to, you know, restart the engine when it was too late, you know, those last few minutes or so, at which point the Warriors had kind of taken momentum of the game. So to me, what stands out is LeBron James and Anthony Davis, a combined 36 points on 12 of 32 shooting, only the fifth game in their tenure together in LA that both failed to reach 20 points, and the Lakers are now 0-5 in those five games. So that to me was a story, because it felt like in the first half, you know, the Lakers got the big lead. They had a bunch of points in the paint. They were kind of dominating on both ends. But really in the second half, in particular the fourth quarter, the Warriors put the clamps on those two, and they didn't get to the rim. They didn't get to the paint. And then the Warriors, you know, were scoring on the other end at ease with 34 points, and it felt like it could have been more in that fourth. So,
well, this Warriors team is supposed to be, in Steve Kerr's dream scenario before the season, a good defensive team. He says a top 10 unit. I don't expect them to be a top 10 offense this year. They don't even really. Even though they have Steph Curry, they have offensive flaws. But what you have up and down the roster is length, activity, some youth, some speed. And you, to me, you saw it tonight. You know, they've had an up and down early season, and that means an up and down defensive season. But when they are engaged, and there was times tonight they have two theoretical good wing defenders, Andrew Wiggins, who's now, I think, like somewhere around sixth in the league in block shots, and then Kelly Oubre, who had his best game as a Warrior tonight, who's kind of all over the place. He's just a pest, kind of. He's like almost Patrick Beverly, the wing version at times. And they kind of tag team LeBron. And then, really, I mean, if Draymond Green is playing well, and he has and has not at times this season, but when he is, he's long been one of the best defenders in the league on Anthony Davis, a smaller good defender, but you know, just he's got all the tricks, and he's got the veteran whistle that sometimes goes his way, and the way he kind of manipulates referees. And that was probably the story tonight. Davis, like you said, Davis goes 6-16 shooting, LeBron goes 6-16 shooting, and I think a lot of that credit is due to those three long active Warriors defenders.
And LeBron went into it in one of his postgame answers where he said that, you mentioned the refereeing, he felt that the refereeing tonight took the Lakers out of their flow. You know, he mentioned that you know, he had five turnovers. I think three of those, or maybe even four, were on travel calls, and he's like, I've made that move, you know, multiple times a night, every night, my entire career, and I've never had as many travels called, you know, as this game. So if the refs want to call it that way, then I don't know why they weren't calling it that way for my entire career, and why they chose tonight to just all of a sudden give me three or four travels. And then he mentioned Draymond's travel, which, you know, was a no call that he got that layup on. And he said he went up to the ref that called the travel on him and said, why was that not a travel on Draymond? And the ref said that wasn't a travel. So there was some kind of chirping from the Lakers side post game about the refereeing, about some of the foul calls late, some of the travels. But you know, I think you got to give credit to the Warriors and holding the Lakers, who've been a juggernaut offensively, to 21 points in the fourth, zero assists in the fourth. You know, it was just a stellar two-way performance.
Yeah, the Warriors, from their side of things, won the game with the second unit, which has been much better than the starters this year. The Warriors starting lineup is really kind of like the worst high usage lineup in the league right now, if you look at like net rating. But their second unit, particularly, I'm talking about not necessarily the late first, late third quarter second unit, but the one that starts the second and fourth quarters, with Eric Paschal, who's like 6'6", you know, forward, is now their center, that, you know, essentially, and a bunch of like shooters, and just kind of like grind it out dudes, Wanamaker, Bazemore out there. They've been like outplaying good teams. I mean, that was the key to their 22-point comeback win over the Clippers. And then now they have a 19-point comeback win over the Lakers. And if you look at both those games, that comeback starts either start of the second quarter or start of the fourth quarter. And some of that's Pascal, right? Pascal was 8 of 11. He had, I think, 18 points in 19 minutes tonight going at, you know, Montrezl Harrell, at Kuzma at times. And some of that, again, like we were talking about earlier, is the Lakers get up and they kind of start to coast maybe a little bit. But that's become the identity of the Warriors right now, whether that second unit at least. Like, they kind of like, they go at teams. They go at these bench units. And I thought that's really kind of where they won the game, or at least got clawed back into the game, I should say.
And you look at the flip side from the Lakers, like, you know, Markieff Morris, minus 12 in 6 minutes. Kyle Kuzma, minus 13 in 25 minutes, including some key minutes in the fourth. But I really look at that Markieff lineup where the lineup is Trez, Markieff, LeBron, Kuzma, and Wes Matthews. And really, aside from LeBron, you don't have another primary ball handler playmaker out there. And I had a tweet, you know, after that lineup just got destroyed, you know, that was all Markieff, you know, so minus 12 in 6 minutes, you know, where it's like, I think the Lakers need to retire that lineup. It had been their second most used lineup, and I think it had a minus 35 net rating heading into tonight. And it's just, that lineup has not worked. And I think if you're the Lakers, like, you have to go with two ball handler scorers, on the floor at all times. And that's AD, that's LeBron, that's Gasol as a passer, you know, Dennis Schroeder, like Caruso, THT. Like, you need two of those guys on the floor at all times as a ball handler, as a playmaker, because I think those minutes ultimately, like, you know, wasn't the difference necessarily, but it did give the Warriors some life in that first half. And we saw that kind of going into halftime. They were back in the game. And it was kind of a seesaw there for a little bit. But heading into the fourth, you know, that's really where they won those, you know, bench minutes. And it has been something that has cost the Lakers, you know, not only in this game, but in a few other losses this season. So I think retinkering their bench unit is going to be something that they're going to have to figure out as well.
Yeah, from a Warriors perspective, they, even though it's been a success, they actually did kind of rejuggle some things tonight. And that was they flipped Wiggins and Oubre, who are both starters. They're starters on the wing. But previously, Wiggins had been with that start of the second, start of the fourth quarter unit, and he'd been doing fine, and that unit was playing well, like I said. But Oubre has been one of the worst players in the league to this point of the year, mostly off, like, he's still done some disruptive stuff defensively, but we're talking about a guy who was 1 of 25 from three at one point. I mean, he's basically been living at about 10% from three. He only went 2 of 8 from deep tonight, but he was more confident, and some of that was the fact that instead of Wiggins being with that second unit, now suddenly Oubre was, and that gave Oubre really a more simplified offensive role. When he's playing with Steph Curry, he's supposed to know all the off-ball cuts and all. It's like a different ecosystem. It's a hard-to-play ecosystem for a guy like Oubre, whereas Wiggins is more comfortable within that, and Oubre, he did so a bit more slashing. He had a big layup at the end. He did, you know, had some hustle plays within there, and I think they found that he makes sense separated a bit from Curry, and, you know, the fan base wants him completely separated from Curry and taken out of the starting lineup, and perhaps that will someday come, but I do think it's a nice middle ground that Steve Kerr has found, and it clearly got Oubre going, because I know you probably haven't seen how poor he's been early in the season, at least on like a nightly basis, but he was probably, what would you say, like third, fourth, fifth most impactful player of the whole night tonight?
Oh, for sure. And I think another thing that kind of went, at least I didn't see it being talked about much on Twitter. I'm not as much on Warriors Twitter, but I thought their bench, the energy from the bench, the celebrating, the kind of, you know, having five guys along the baseline. Like, I know Frank Vogel ended up complaining about that a couple times, and the refs ultimately, you know, didn't do anything about that. But I thought the energy of the literal bench would, and just kind of being invested in defensive possessions in crunch time, and you know, just all throughout that fourth quarter, really provided a energy level for the Warriors. Like, they were the ones that, you know, were playing with that confidence and that bravado that you know, you would expect the Lakers to be playing with at home. And I think you kind of saw that impact of, you know, normally this would be a raucous Staples Center crowd and going crazy, and it's LeBron versus Steph and Draymond versus AD, and like it would have been a fun environment, but with no fans in attendance and it just being both sides kind of creating that energy, I think the Warriors had a massive edge in that regard, and just kind of dominated. We're just looking at the bench energy, it was no contest. Golden State had way more than the Lakers did.
Yeah, and some of that is just like regular season importance, right? I mean, the Lakers lose tonight, it's like whatever, like that's a big win for the Warriors, just for them clawing that out. It's like, oh, now they can ride a little bit momentum, and that they have an easier schedule coming up. Spurs, Knicks, Wolves a couple times, and it's suddenly like 7-6 feels a lot different than 6-7 to them as they try to gain some footing as like a legit playoff team, whereas the Lakers, like, whatever, and that's something that it's just the Lakers can't really, you try to avoid that. I know Frank Vogel talks about habits a lot, but the realities of the situation are what they are, and it's just sometimes gonna be tough for the Lakers to get up for a 48-minute game every other night when nightly results really don't have that much weight, particularly as they look down the conference and nobody's really like clawing at them.
Yeah, and it's also weird that they're now 4-4 at home and 7-0 on the road. And the road schedule, has been easier than the home schedule. So when you look at some of the losses, losing to the Clippers or the Blazers or now the Warriors, like those are teams that are going to be, with the Clippers and Blazers, those could be two top six seeds. And then, we'll see what happens with the Warriors. Like they definitely are going to be in that playoff mix, at least in the play-in mix, I think at a minimum. Those are solid teams. Look at the teams they've beaten on the road. It's the Rockets, it's the Spurs, it's the Grizzlies, it's the Thunder. Like, I think all four of those teams are probably going to be in the lottery. So it does make sense from like an actual just like how good the teams are, why they've been better on the road. But it is weird that, this was a team that was dominant at Staples Center last season and is already off to a 4-4 start, which, looking across the league at the other elite teams, most teams have two home losses at most, one, two, maybe three. But no one is 500 at home among that contending group. So it is a bit of a weird trend. And I think, we've seen it across the league. Road teams are winning more than home teams. But it is kind of weird for a Lakers team that prides itself on being so good at Staples Center, for them to have this like funky start where, it doesn't feel like they have a home court advantage right now, the way it is for some other teams.
What was the vibe in there?
They were frustrated. They took a while to talk to the media post game. Again, like it was the Warriors were the ones kind of bringing that energy, bringing that noise. Like even James Wiseman, like I tweeted, after he got his fifth foul, came out, knocked over a Gatorade cart and was pissed off. And you could tell, as you said, the Warriors were the team that cared more, and they brought that energy. And even though it was a rough start, and they were down multiple times by 15 plus points, they ultimately kind of got over that. And I think with the Lakers, it was the exact opposite. And now they're going on a 7-game road trip. It's the inverse of the Warriors, where they have a really tough road trip coming up. They got the Bucks, the Sixers, the Celtics. Even a Hawks team, it was kind of feisty. The Bulls played them close at Staples. Like, this is not a cakewalk of a road trip. Going to be gone for 2 weeks. So I think this is really going to, this next stretch of 2 weeks is going to be true insight into where the Lakers are, how seriously they're taking this. Because we know, ultimately the seeding doesn't matter, record doesn't matter for them. This is a team that is the prohibitive favorite. Even if they end up as like a 3 seed, you're still going to pick them. It's kind of like that 2017, 2018 Warriors season where the record doesn't really matter. As long as they're in the playoffs, have some type of home court advantage, like they'll be fine. But I am interested to see, do they get up for that Milwaukee game on Thursday? Like how seriously do they take Philly and Boston? And if they can go into those places and win, and maybe even win convincingly, like that kind of reaffirms that, hey, these guys are the prohibitive favorites, number one by far. And we can debate a loss like this, but really, like in the grand scheme of things, I think they're fine.
I want to talk about Wiseman. And before I get into a deeper, where it's going with him in his rookie season conversation, what did you think of him? That's your first time seeing him in person. I assume the length, size, speed combo at the center, left from a lefty center is eye-popping in person. Although he had maybe his worst game of his rookie season. What did you think?
You said it best. Like, he is a physical marvel. And seeing him versus Marc Gasol, like, you know, that one collision, it was just, it was pretty hilarious. And, but I think, you know, he had five turnovers in 13 minutes to go with his five fouls and, you know, 4 points, three rebounds. Like, you can tell he's still learning on the fly and is not fully comfortable. Like, he looked like a rookie. And I think, I don't remember, you know, exactly how many charges he ended up. I know it was at least two, but it might have been three.
I think three.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm looking at it quickly. A game worst minus 19 in his 13 minutes. Like, that, you know, I think he clearly has the tools and he has the frame. And I think, you know, he had one just monster dunk, I think, early in the game where you know, the Warriors kind of cleared out the lane and no Laker rotated over. And he just dunked it from, like, you know, felt like he jumped from 10 feet away and just slammed it home effortlessly. And you kind of look at that and you're like, I mean, this guy is clearly a freak. But you know, some of the decision making, you know, again, with five turnovers, three charges, like, he's got to make better decisions. And some of those were, you know, very obvious, where, like, the guy was planted and he's still just taking it through their chest. And you're like, you know, that's where you use your athleticism to Eurostep or try to get around the guy and finish around them instead of just plowing through them. So I think clearly some things he has to learn. And you know, I know the Lakers tried to drag him out with Marc Gasol, and
Schroeder got him a couple times on switches early. I think this might have been his worst game. He's had a couple bad ones. He didn't play well against the Clippers. I think Ibaka really kind of gave it to him. He's had some really good games too. I thought he was good in Denver, particularly in the second half the other night. Was really good against the Kings. Weirdly, the Warriors got blown out the first two games of the season, but those were two of his best games. He was shooting threes back then. Steve Kerr is now saying he hasn't been shooting threes because they're telling him to dive to the rim every time. The thing is, they're throwing, like, hundreds of things at his brain all at once on both sides of the floor, and he's just so new. And I think it is mentally overwhelming him a little bit. I do think him, more than everybody else, is going to benefit from the lessened competition coming up. I think playing the Knicks, playing the Wolves a couple times, away from the spotlight of, you know, I mean, the guy grew up watching Anthony Davis, and that's who he was guarding tonight. I do, you can kind of see the jitteriness and the overthinking and, you know, even the frustration. They talk about him getting overly, yes, they like that he hits the Gatorade bottle. They like that he cares. But in the moment, that's kind of getting in his head a little bit. It's why he gets the ball in transition, goes, hey, I'm having a bad game. I need to go make a play. And then he crashes into Marc Gasol and gets his fifth foul. So what's interesting for the Warriors is they're in this balance right now where, like, every result does matter. You know, we could be talking about a team that's going to be sitting there on the fringe of the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seed in the West, in a very crowded West, if people are looking at the standings, where, you know, nightly results matter. And he's minus 19 tonight, where you could say, you know, let's say he doesn't get in foul trouble and they play him a bit more, and if they still struggle with him on the floor, maybe they lose tonight. Yet he is the number two overall pick. He is, in a lot of ways, you know, the future, the next decade. And is that as a very valuable trade piece that helps him get the next door, or is it just as James Wiseman, your starting center for the next decade? And they need to accelerate his growth as much as possible, and that means playing him through struggles, but also trying to win games in a very important moment of Steph Curry's career. And it is just, it's a balance that, it's just, they're at a very interesting time, and it'll continue to be a conversation. It's a rabid conversation among the fan base. It's in the coaching offices. Post game tonight, Steph had a really good answer about it, talking about, hey, I got benched for AC Law back in my rookie year, blah blah blah. So it's fun, you know. You're seeing two eras collide, and it makes sports interesting. But it is an odd balance that you very rarely see a team, not necessarily a contender, but in a desperate moment to win now, while also grooming a number two overall pick through the growing pains.
I think the other thing that kind of factors into all this is just with COVID-19, you don't know when a team is going to be decimated, and that's where you need to rack up those wins, because at a moment's notice, you could have four or five rotation guys out. And, you know, if you have 9 or 10 guys, you know, the league is not going to postpone the game. You're going to have to play. And that's where, you know, you could have a rough stretch of a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, where you have 9-10 guys and you start to lose games that you might have otherwise won. So, that was kind of one of my takeaways was like, you saw a desperation from the Warriors that, I'm definitely not accustomed to seeing from this team. And that had kind of been the theme over the last couple of days from the Lakers side was, people asking them, what's it like with the power shift where, now the Warriors are kind of the ones that are hunting and not being the hunted and you guys are the hunted. And just talking about the Lakers trying to make their own Warriors type run where, they're looking at the next half decade of, can we win multiple championships with Anthony Davis and LeBron James together? This had kind of been building the last couple of days, just this marquee matchup. And I think it lived up to the hype. I don't think it was as good as, I don't know if you caught the end of the Bucks Nets game, but
looked like the East Finals. I was joking coming onto this podcast saying we just saw the West Finals. I do not believe that. That looked like the East Finals, Bucks Nets.
That was a great game.
Yes. And you're right. I mean, because you did feel, tonight watching Warriors Lakers, it's that you're not leaving that win going like, uh-oh, here come the Warriors to threaten the Lakers. It was just more the Lakers let it get away. It's a good sign for the Warriors what they're doing, the way they are coming back. And I do think there's a lane for them in this West because I think the West is a little overrated in that meat of it. And if the Warriors develop, if Steve Kerr keeps sharpening rotations, finding stuff that works, if Wiseman does get more consistently better, if Draymond and Steph stay healthy and in somewhat of a vintage version of themselves, particularly Steph scoring, there's, like I said, a lane to get, fifth, sixth, seventh, especially with, look at Portland. CJ McCollum just announced a fractured foot. He's going to be out at least a month. Nurkic is already out with the wrist. Like, there are some teams that were considered to be above the Warriors that are going through some definite struggles of their own. So, like I said, interesting lane for them coming up. Meanwhile, the Lakers just kind of probably cruise into the one seed. Although I am interested in their next game. Is it Thursday night TNT against the Bucks?
Yeah.
That'll be good. Two off days before that.
We're talking about previews here. Like that could be a potential finals preview. And at a minimum, the two top finishers in MVP and LeBron and Giannis. And I think that that is definitely one of the marquee matchups of the first half of the NBA schedule. And a really good test, I think, for the Lakers because, I think they're, as we're discussing, like, we don't really know who, if anyone, is actually going to challenge them in the postseason, assuming they can get there and help, in one piece. So, I mean, for me, it's like I look at the Clippers, I look at the Nets, I look at the Bucks. Like, those are the three teams that stand out. I don't know if anyone else could get to that level. So when they are playing a Clippers or a Bucks or a Nets, like those are the matchups you kind of want to see them get up for. And definitely opening night was a dud for the Lakers. The Clippers, I embarrassed them at times. So I think going into this road trip, like this is going to be a tone setter for can you go into Milwaukee, beat a team that blew you out last year in Milwaukee around the same time of year. And kind of set the tone for this 7-game trip that I think is going to kind of dictate how they're viewed at least over the next few weeks. So I'm excited for that one, and I think it should be a good one.
I always find it bad for the opponent when the league's prohibitive favorite loses the game before. Like if you're Milwaukee, you're probably watching tonight like, oh man, the Lakers lost, because that usually motivates them going into the next game. It's really as we kind of try to compare this Lakers early stages of this Lakers run or what they want to be a dynastic type run to those Warriors teams. Those Warriors teams went, I think, nearly three seasons, maybe two seasons. It was something ridiculous without losing back-to-back games. The 73-9 season that everyone references, they didn't lose two in a row. It was like they always played really well after a loss because there's that motivation factor. And yeah, for the Lakers, like you said, you'd like to see them not only, hey, you're going into Milwaukee for a statement, but hey, you kind of played a poor game the previous game, go correct that. So I do kind of expect that Thursday night. And in a less marquee game, game. The Warriors got the Spurs and Knicks coming up on a home back-to-back where I don't think as many fans will be watching those two games, but those are, I don't want to say nothing's a must win early in the season, but the Warriors need to pile up wins against bad teams because they're going to lose to a lot of good teams.
So. You called it on the Forum Club that the Spurs are feisty, man. So that's not an easy game.
No, they just whacked the Blazers in Portland. Keldon Johnson, they got some random players that are starting to look, you know, gain careers up there. So, Jovan, appreciate you coming on. I guess I came on to the Forum Club. It's a little combo edition. And I believe this feed and the Forum Club feed will have larger podcasts up episodes late Tuesday, early Wednesday. So look out for that. And thanks for coming on.